Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Prahlad, the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu, text number 6. Shri Narada Vacha, Shudva Putra Giro Daitya, Parapaksha Samahita, Jahasa Buddhir Apalanam, Vidyate para buddhibi. Shri Narada Vacha. Narada Muni said, Shrutva, hearing, Putra Gira, the instructive words of his son, Daitya, Hiranyakashipu, Parapaksha, on the side of the enemy. What else does parapaksha mean? I thought that's the opposite argument. Oh, it's purva. So parapaksha. Paksha means?
Paksha means wing.
Oh, I see. So on the other side. So the other side must be the side of the enemy. Samahita. Full of faith. Jahasa, laughed. Budi, the intelligence. Balanam, of small boys. Vidyate, is polluted. Parabudibi, instructions from the enemy's camp. Param means just the other people's understanding. Anyone who has a different understanding than me must be my enemy. Well, you agree with me 100%, right? At least 99, so that we can forgive 1% creativity. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Narada Muni continued, when Prahlad spoke about the path of self-realization, devotional service, thus being faithful to the camp of his father's enemies, Hiranyakashipu, the king of the demons, heard Prahlad's words and he laughingly said, thus the intelligence of children spoil. Thus is the intelligence of children spoiled by the words of the enemy. Purport. Hiranyakashipu, being a demon, always considered Lord Vishnu and his devotees to be his enemies. Therefore the word parapaksha, on the side of the enemy, is used here. Hiranyakashipu never agreed with the words of Vishnu or Krishna. Rather, he was angered by the intelligence of a Vaishnava. Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Prachaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Give up all other duties and surrender unto me. But demons like Hiranyakashipu never agreed to do this. Therefore Krishna says, Namam Diskritino Muda Prapadente Naradama Maya Pritigyana Asram Bhavam Ashritya. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. The Asura Bhava, the atheistic nature, is directly represented by Hiranyakashipu. Such persons being Mudha and Aradama, foolish and rascals, the lowest of men, will never accept Vishnu as the Supreme and surrender to him. Hiranyakashipu naturally became increasingly angry that his son Prahlad was being influenced by the camp of the enemies. He therefore asked that saintly persons like Narada not to be allowed within the residential quarters of his son. Otherwise, Prahlad would be further spoiled by Vaishnava instructions. Shinaruvacha shutva putra giro daitya parapaksha samahita jahasa buddhir balanam vidite parabodhibi. Narada Muni continued, when Prahlad spoke about the path of self-realization in devotional service, thus being faithful to the camp of the father's enemies, Hiranyakashipu, the king of the demons, heard Prahlad's words, and he laughingly said, thus is the intelligence of children spoiled by the words of the enemy. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, there are two verses quite similar. One of them is Dvo imo Dvo Bhuta Sargo Lokesmin Asram Bhava Dvo Bhuta Sargo Lokesmin Asram Daivam Asram Evacha Daivam Vishra Sakprota Asram Parthameshinu. That I've heard, O son of Pritha, in this world there are two kinds of created beings. One is called divine and the other demoniac. I've already explained to you at length the divine qualities. Now I'll speak to you about the demoniac. Dvo bhuta sargo lokesmin daivam asram evacha daiva vishrik sakprota asram parthameshino. And then Krishna also says, dvo imo purusho loke daivam asram chakshara evacha. Is that 17th chapter? What does Krishna say? What's that? No, where it says Shara Chakra Evacha, Shara Savani Bhutani, of 15th chapter. Yeah, 15. Dvo imo purusholo, okay? Shara Chakra Evacha. Shara Sarvani Bhutani Kutasta Shara Uchite. In this world there are two kinds of created beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world everyone is fallible, and in the spiritual world everyone is infallible. So fallible means they agree with Krishna. Or the infallible means that they infallibly agree with Krishna, and fallible means that they don't agree with Krishna. So therefore, by conclusion, the fallible are all asuras. The fallible are asuras, and the infallible are asuras. And how do we know what Krishna wants? Well, Krishna says that trividanarakasyedam dwaram nashitam atmanaha kama krodha tathalovas tasma etam trayam tajet. Etera vimukta kuntiya tamo dvara srivir nara acharat yatma shreyas tato yati purangati. That there are three gates leading to hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every man should get free from these three gates because they lead to the degradation of the self. A person who gets free from these three gates performs acts which are conducive to self-realization. Thus he obtains the supreme destination. Yak shastra vidim utshrija vartate kamakarata dasasidim avatnoti nasukam naparam gitim. That one who gives up shastra and acts whimsically attains neither peace nor happiness nor the supreme destination. In other words, Krishna doesn't give us very much choice. Either a demon or a devotee. Or you're trying to become a devotee. So you're half a demon. You're not in either camp fully. But that's called marginal. You can have both cards. When you're with the demons, you can show your demoniac card. You'll be accepted. And when you're with the devotees, you can show your devotional card. And then they'll think you're a devotee. It's like Mukunda. when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was at Srivas Anga, and he was revealing the Mahaprakash. At that time, so many great devotees came before Lord Chaitanya, like Murari Gupta came before him, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed his form as Lord Ramachandra. Hanuman was there, and Sita and Lakshman were there. And when others came, Krishna revealed, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed his forms to them. Like Kolavekshara Sridhar was in the mood of a cowherd boy, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested Krishna and Balaram. And everyone got to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his different forms, except for Mukunda. So I was asking, well, you haven't called for Mukunda. When are you going to call for Mukunda? Mukunda was a very dear childhood friend of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, well, he's a Sharalarka, which means that he mixes with everyone. When he's with the Mayavadis, he suddenly becomes a Mayavadi. When he's with the yogis, he becomes a yogi. And when he's with the devotees, he appears to be a devotee. So I don't want to see his face. So they went out and told Mukunda, who was waiting anxiously to see Lord Chaitanya, and he said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't want to see your face. Wasn't very enlivening news to Mukunda. So Mukunda said, all right, well, how long will it take before I can see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again? So they went back and asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when can Mukunda see you? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, after a million lifetimes. They went back and told Mukunda that you can see him after a million lifetimes. So Mukunda started to dance in ecstasy. I'll see him, I'll see him. So they came back and told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Mukunda was told he can't see you, you won't see him in a million lifetimes. And he started to dance in ecstasy. That I'll see him, I'll see him. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, call him immediately. A million lifetimes, he was quite ecstatic. It's called patience. But the point is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would like us to be on one side or the other. He'd like us especially to be on the side of the devotees, or at least try to become on the side of the devotees. And to do that, we have to know Shastra. Because if we don't know Shastra, we won't know what to do and what's not to do. Now, Hiranyakashipu, no one ever told him what actually he was supposed to do, except for the modes of nature. That he accepted, illusion. But when Prahlad came along and told him the truth, he became very disturbed. He thought he was going to live forever, and therefore he didn't need any instruction, because he had already achieved the ultimate goal of the material existence, what everyone's struggling for, to become eternal. Of course, we know we are already eternal. So that's why we want to become eternal. No one wants it if we said, here's a magic wand, I can tap you on the head with it and you'll disappear. No one will say, yes, please do. But if we said we have another wand which we could touch you with, you're going to live forever. Yeah, go ahead, touch me. Deha patya kala tradishu atma sanyesh vasatsupi tesham pramato nidanam pashyanapi napashyati. Srimad Bhagavatam Sri Deva Goswami says, deha, the body, kalatra, the wife, deha patya, apatya, the children, and adishu, and everything else that comes along when you get a wife and children, you get a lot of other things along with it. So, what are these? Why do people want these things? Why does a woman want a husband? Why does a man want a wife? Why do they want children? Why do they want all these things? A house, whatever. It's because they want to be protected. Anyone who thinks that this body doesn't need protection is wrong. King Ugrasena, although he's a pure devotee, it says in the Krishna book at least, he had 10 quadrillion bodyguards, personal bodyguards. Obviously, he was feeling a little anxiety, like someone was out to get him. Everyone, every person wants protection, and the more one becomes popular or famous or wealthy or whatever, the more protection one feels one needs. So it's not that we make advancement in material life, then we feel we're protected. But actually, the more things we get, the more things we have to feel like we have to protect. People living on the street, as I mentioned when I was attending the Iyengar Institute for 1 month in Pune. Iyengar is their institute, they teach yoga. And every day there was Hriday Chaitanya Prabhu, who's the GBC for an area he was with. We were together, and there was another devotee named Mahendra. We were taking classes every day. And when we'd walk there in the evening, you'd see, coming back from the evening class, you see all these people sleeping on the street. And they were sleeping very peacefully. As you think, people sleeping on the street, they'd be very disturbed, lamenting, oh, I don't have a nice soft bed. And it's, you know. No, they were actually quite peaceful because they had nothing to lose. They had no worries at all. If you gave them some money, put it in their pocket, then they'd start worrying that someone's going to take the money. But if you have no money, you don't worry about anyone taking anything from you because there's nothing to take. You can't lose anything because you don't have anything. Therefore, you can be quite peaceful. And as soon as you get something, immediately you become protective. And as soon as one touches your belongings, don't touch that, it's mine. Let's step outside, we can settle it there. Then immediately there's enemies. People who might take something from you. So Hiranyakashipu was controlling the whole universe. Obviously, he was potentially disturbed. Especially if someone comes along and says, my dear sir, you think you own everything, but you actually have nothing. What do you mean I have nothing? I'm controlling everything. Sir, you don't control anything. It's like that little boy, the great yogi who had meditated for thousands of years to attain mystic power, and then he declared that he was going to walk across the water. So all the townspeople, they gathered on all sides of the lake to watch this wonderful yogi walk across the water. And he walked across the water, and everyone was bowing down, Bhagavan! Except for one little boy. And the yogi became, he saw the little boy, he was happy to see everyone else bowing down, and became disturbed by seeing this little boy didn't offer him respect. So he went up to the little boy and said, hey kid, what are you doing? Get down, bow down. He said, why should I bow down? He said, I walked across the water. It took me 1,000 years to learn the trick. So the little boy said, well, I can do it for 3 pice. He said, what do you mean for 3 pice? He said, for 3 pice, I can take a boat across the water. We're both going to get across the water, so your mystic power is worth 3 pice. So people are striving so hard to, if they can make it up to 100 years old, then everyone thinks they're successful. Never mind, they have 100 years of accumulated impious activity. And it can take them another 20 million years before they get the human form of life again. Their next life is a tree. So their record of 120 years of living, they're going to quadruple it as a tree. But no one will give them any credit. No one goes to a tree and says, oh, you're so fortunate, you can live for 10,000 years. My God, I wish I could be like you. Don't worry. You have every opportunity. As far as I can see, that's you're going to be part of my family in your next life. you're going to be a chip off the old block. the acorn never falls far from the tree. So everyone, what to speak of these the demons, they don't want to hear it. Practically no one in the material world wants to hear the truth. Which didn't think that Hiranyakashipu became disturbed when Prahlad told him the truth. If you walk up to anyone and tell them the truth, they'll become disturbed. If you tell someone, oh, you're beautiful, you're brilliant, you're wise, you're this or that, you're a Bhagavan, people say, well, very nice. And if you say, you're a fool and a rascal, actually, you're a thief, you think everything you have belongs to you, but actually belongs to Krishna. You have no intelligence because you don't even know who you are. What will people do? Oh, sage, you're so great. An ordinary person will become very disturbed telling them the truth. So everyone in the material world, even if you tell a devotee, my dear devotee, you sing like a frog. What will the devotee think? This person hates me. I didn't mean you sing like a frog. You sing like a devotional frog. I'm sure by your devotional singing, you're going to attract many, many female she-frogs. Now people will become very disturbed. Why are you insulting me like that? Who do you think you are? Why are you so puffed up? So practically speaking, when we read Bhagavad Gita, we don't really read it many times because if we heard it, we'd feel insulted. We'd actually understand that I'm also amongst the mudhas and the naradamas, whatever, that I'm trying to become a devotee. Or the maya pritiganas and the asaram bhavam ashrityas. That tendency is there in mixed devotional service. But by the performance of devotional service, we can become purified from it. But if we think, as soon as we accept ourselves as pure devotees, then we're really in trouble. Thinking, oh, these rascal Naradamas and these mudhas and the Maya Pritiganas, there are people who are foolish, there are people who are sinful, there are persons who are deceitful and atheistic, and I'm a pure devotee. I'm on the good side. I'm on the A team. They're on the B team. Now one should recognize the fact that we're striving to get free from our material conceptions of life, and therefore we don't become sympathetic to the sinful and the atheistic and the deceitful and the foolish. We don't become sympathetic. Of course, we are sympathetic. Devotees sympathetic, paraduka duki. But we know we can't associate with them and not get affected by their association. Therefore, we try to associate with the devotees. And even when we go out and associate with the non-devotees, we keep the devotees, the acharya, within our heart, because that's why we go out there. We do it to serve the acharyas and Krishna. Otherwise, the tendency, many times I know in book distribution, as I said, I used Radha Damodar. I was on Radha Damodar for some time, which you may not have heard of. And it was the top book distribution team in the world at that time. Full of competitiveness, which was good because we distributed a lot of books. But I was at one airport I always came in just about number 20 in the world. And I was always with number one and number two, which kept me number 20 because I was always envious, kept me motivated. I'd watch them distribute a book, and then I get so envious, I'd go out and immediately distribute a book also. And they were also, there's such competition. One of the top distributors in the world always came up to me and said, how much money do you have? You go up to everyone, ask them how much money they had, how much Lakshmi. And I tell them, and if I had more than he did, we went, ah! any case, I was probably number 20 in the world at that time, and I was in the airport with just another devotee, and he was number 2 or 3 in the world. And usually I used to try to learn from the techniques of the devotees to find out how to distribute books better. But I watched him. He'd only choose, this is a very small airport. It's called Charlotte Airport, North Carolina. Really small. And not so many people came by, but he'd only choose the most beautiful women who came by to stop. He was quite a good-looking devotee. And he'd stop them, and if you took a video of it, you'd think it was Romeo meeting Juliet. It was really romantic. And inevitably, he'd melt the lady and she'd give a donation. Big donation. He didn't go after small, poor people, only the most dressed up, beautiful ladies. So this went on for some months. He was always doing better than I am. And then one day, he met the lady he was looking for. And that was, the romance started there and it continued afterwards. And that was the end of his book distribution. So, unless we're conscious of, what's that? Ra. No. There, what's that? I don't think. Kunju is K. There are many like that. They learned the technique probably from him. I mean, I learned many techniques. There are some of them. That was one technique I didn't apply very much. I couldn't imitate him, so didn't even try. Besides, I didn't think it was worth, you know, going up a notch or two on the Sankirtan newsletter. So the point is that we have to be careful about what we're actually trying to achieve. We can, in the name of devotional service, we can associate with people in the wrong consciousness. If we don't keep the instructions and ultimately the mood of the acharyas and Krishna in our service, it doesn't matter what service we are in, we're in danger. If we start thinking we're a special group, we're the book distributors, and we can do whatever, anything we want, and we'll be protected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we'll get into difficulty. On the other hand, one has to maintain humility and all the other good qualities that are necessary to advance in devotional service. And then we can actually, when people tell us what we have to hear, we can accept it. We'll be able to advance in pure devotional service. Nowadays they have something, and especially in America, which is coming to Europe soon. Anything that starts in America usually comes. It's called snowflakes. You've heard of snowflakes? What is a snowflake? A what?
It's called snowflake.
What does that mean? No, it's college students who are snowflakes. Do you know what a snowflake is, a college student, or a... Yes, yeah. You say, "Excuse me, miss," and she goes, and they go, "What did you call me? My, I'm having a nervous breakdown." He called me a miss. Aren't you a miss? Actually, I'm one of the other 95 categories of gender. You've insulted me. I have to go and see my psychiatrist now. Because my mind is completely disturbed. I can't do anything today. I have to lie down in my bed and try to recover from this maha-aparad. So that's called a snowflake. You have to learn a whole different language and vocabulary and address people accordingly and not use key words that disturb people's minds and set them into a tailspin all the way down to depression or suicidal. Excuse me, sir. Wow, my God. He called me a sir. I think I'll jump off the bridge. I can't tolerate this. So that's called a snowflake. They easily melt. So we shouldn't be snowflakes. Anytime someone looks at us the wrong way, possibly insulting us, or they tell me, or the typical devotee who's falling asleep during japa, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, and you go, excuse me, and you go up to him and say, Prabhu, wake up. What? I was completely awake. Why did you touch me? Are you insulting me? You thought I was asleep. Yamaraj, we'll see you soon. Previously, someone would fall asleep in class, and there would be the temple commander. He'd go around with a squirt gun. And then the devotee, he'd have the good enough sense to stand up and then stand in front of, behind Prabhupada. So if you see these videos in Los Angeles of all these devotees behind Prabhupada, they're not guards. They're all the people who got squirted with the gun, who were falling asleep in class, and they were obliged to stand in front of behind the Vyasasan. So in case they fell asleep when they were standing, then Prabhupada wouldn't see them. So we have to be a little tolerant and accept good instruction, and then we can advance in devotional service. Otherwise, we have to stay as either a mudha or Naradama or a Maya Pritigyana from Asuram Bhavam Ashitya. We won't advance towards pure devotional service. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? The other thing is we should get enough sleep. I had one disciple, he'd never get enough sleep for one reason or another. So during one kirtan, he jumped up in the air and he fell asleep in the air. And he landed and he broke his teeth. So it's dangerous. You have to make sure you get enough teeth, enough sleep, especially if you're going to jump up in the air during a kirtan. Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
You mentioned that you quoted Krishna about the three gates to hell, lust, anger, and greed. And sometimes we feel we can justify, maybe not so much lust, but maybe some greed for book points or something.
Tatra-lalya-mulyam-ekalam.
Yes, yes. Or righteous anger at some rascal. And then we stay preoccupied meditating on the person. So how to deal with that? How to break the cycle of...
Well, greedy for book points and things like that, that's not so bad. Because the very service, if it's done properly, will actually purify us eventually, so that if you're greedy for book points for 20 years and then after 25 years you see no one really cares how many book points you get anymore. They don't shout your name out anymore. You know, Jai Maharati! There's no more like that. Then you get bored of the whole thing after some time. You think, well, maybe I should do it for some other reason. Maybe I shouldn't do it anymore. And after a while, it goes away. As far as being angry at people, Hanuman was angry at Ravana, and that's all right. But angry at devotees is not a good idea. We should choose who to be angry with. But anger is all right if it's towards the right object. Someone who offends Krishna or his devotee, that's bona fide anger. But other kinds of anger, not very auspicious. Anything else? Yes.
How can we deal with these snowflake personalities? Do you have any advice?
I don't know. Do you meet very many of them?
There are a few.
They are coming.
Winter is coming.
Just now coming. Put them in the freezer. Well, you deal with them. Probably the best thing is not to deal with them. Because you may not know, you know, you may hit the wrong spot. But in any case, if you had to deal with them very cautiously. Generally speaking, when you tell people how wonderful they are, they don't get offended by it. And if you tell them anything else, then you might get into trouble. When we were doing Bhutta-Shushan, the main line that really worked effectively, which is not always so good, in the airports, especially when it was really passionate, anyone who walked by would look at their clothing to see what they were identifying with. Because everyone, you know, in America, they have some T-shirt, says this or that, or they have some boots, cowboy boots made out of... And you go, wow, it's rattlesnake. They have all different types. You learn all the different... And then, and then you go, wow, it's rattlesnake. My name's Phil. So they're wearing these boots because they want to be recognized. You know, they want, the in crowd knows what the type of leather it is. And when you can recognize it, then, you know, immediately they think, well, this person must be part of the, you know, the community. They're one of the insiders. And they'll immediately stop. Yeah, all right. Or, you know, whatever it says on the T-shirt. It says, make love, not war. And go, hey, make love, not war. Great! And then immediately will stop. Because they were just waiting for someone to recognize them, to notice them, to notice something about them. And then they'll stop. And even if they don't stop, many times we see people coming by, we saw them for the same time. Every because if you're doing the airport, a lot of business people come by and they're the same business people all the time. They've stopped. One time in an airport, Chicago, there was like 20 Bhutta-Shushans out in the airport. And so some people get stopped like 20 times every time they get by. And then they come up to Milwaukee where I was distributing with another devotee. And they get stopped by this other devotee, myself. And they were just like, smoke would come out of their ears. One time I put out my hand to shake someone's hand. He took a cigarette and put it out of my hand. He was so frustrated. He didn't stop. But, you know, inevitably, even if people don't like you, they don't like what you're doing, they know you. But if you say something nice to them, you go, wow, look at those shoes, that's fantastic. And they go, rah! And then they walk by and go, wow, he said something nice to me. They turn around and wave or something. Because, no, you know, a compliment. It's like you have... many times in the airport, you have a woman with her daughter coming by. You stop there and go, I'll give here's a book for each one of you. Are you two sisters? And the lady would have, many times she'd go, oh, you're just trying to, you know, flatter me. And then she'd say, how much do you want? That's they're living life to hear something like that. That's what keeps them alive. So say something nice. Yes.
There's one person. He was waging war with devotees. He was sending goons, gangsters, to attack devotees.
Where was this?
In South Russia. And there was a court case, and then Every few days he would meet a book distributor in the center of the city, and he would try to sell him books, and he would scream at him and insult him. And every time this devotee, I think his name was Jagannath something, as far as I remember, Jagannath Priya. And every time the devotee was very humble and said, sorry, please forgive me, please have a good day. And he was very, very nice. And then after several days, this guy started thinking, how come he's so, I'm insulting him and he's so cool. So eventually he himself became a devotee. This guy.
I know one devotee who I was traveling with for some time. He became a sannyasi. In the beginning, he'd, every time he'd see a devotee on the street, he'd walk up to him and take the book and rip it in pieces. Yes. And then I guess one day he got one of the books and read it, became a devotee.
I think he got a
suite. A suite. So it's powerful. All right, thank you very much. Krantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.